Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Welcome to Fat Mascara. I'm Jess.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Jen. Happy Thursday. Interview episode.
Happy Thursday. This is a good one. All right. My science friends, my product obsessives.
I'm in heaven.
Okay. Gather your products. Turn them around. Get those ingredient lists facing you. I don't know.
Because Erica's gonna... school you.
I should have thought this through. I was like, gather your inky lists. Gather your hair products.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Erica, we love you. Thank you for putting up with us.
Yeah. This okay.
Okay. So here's who we have. We have Erica Douglas, better known as Sister Scientist. Okay. We followed her career for years. She's spoken as an independent expert at some of the beauty events that Jess and I attend. And I've just always loved the way that she breaks down science. It's very understandable. She doesn't hold back. She tells you what she really thinks, and she has the chops to go with it. She has a BS in chemical engineering from Stanford, NBD. Then she went on to Northwestern University, where she conducted research in biochemistry and molecular and cell biology. She served as a director of research and development for the hair company ORS. When she worked there, I think it was called Organic Root Stimulator. And she's been working as a chemist and formulator for more than a decade. She'll tell us about what she's doing now in her career. And then we'll talk about, she does hair and skincare, but we talk a lot about hair care in this. And she really breaks down, we didn't plan for this to happen this way, but like some of the myths that surround hair care. She's like, okay, here's why not. And she digs into some of those ingredients that you might have on your no-no list or that other brands might. Why are they there? Should they be there? It's a great, really informative interview. And like, I am in my happy place with this. Shall we do it?
Let's hit it.
Wow, I was about to just call you Erica, but then I was like, she is so on brand with the jacket. Hello, Sister Scientist.
Hello, how are you guys?
Hi, welcome to Fat Mascara.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
We're excited to have you. You've been on my radar for years. I love following along with you. I love how you break down science so simply. And we have so many questions for you. But first, I have to ask you, because you seem to have a bunch of jobs. Like, how would you describe it? You're like an educator, a formulator, a bench chemist. Are you that still? Like, how would you describe yourself professionally?
Oh, yeah. I'm I'm a lot of things. So yes, I'm all of those things. I am a bench chemist. I'm a formulator by trade. Started off that way. And now I am doing, I'm an educator. So through Sister Scientist, I do a lot of education for young women interested in STEM and also just beauty consumers and who are just interested in what, you know, what's going on in this bottle here? What's great for my hair? Why is this not working? And just really educating the consumer on what, you know, what's fact and what's crap. And then, of course, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm the CEO of a contract manufacturing company called MSeed Group. And that is where I like to call that. That's my adult job. But I work with startup brands and helping to ideate, innovate, and scale their brands so that they become the next big thing.
And is that just hair and cosmetics, all different kinds of products?
We do hair, skincare, some home care or home goods. Oh. We do not do color cosmetics at the moment, but hair and skin are definitely my passion. And we currently have a variety of very exciting hair and skincare companies, up and coming companies that I'm sure have already hit the scene and are, you know, making their print on the industry. So we've been able to see people before they were, you know, before anybody who knew who they were, and now being able to know that we had some level of involvement in their success is really what motivates me and drives me and kind of keeps me going every day.
Now, do they let you talk about which brands these are? Is it all like, here are the secret formulator behind
the
like,
branding? If I tell you, I gotta kill you.
All right.
They're, you know, we've...
Stuff you've seen.
I put it like this. You can't walk up and down the Target beauty aisles without seeing something that we've manufactured and or formulated.
How exciting.
But that is, you know, one of our big things is discretion and confidentiality. We don't put everybody's business out in the streets. It's the secret sauce, and we keep it under lock and key.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, let's talk about how you got into beauty. Obviously, you know, your foundation is science, but you've said that getting into beauty was really kind of spurred by like some negative experiences, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
I don't want to get too painful, too personal.
Oh, now I look back and I just laugh. But I had severe allergic reactions to nickel and certain types of metal. So I couldn't like wear belts without something. So I was constantly breaking out in rashes.
I think of a belt, I think of the buckles being like outside, not touching your skin. Like how did that?
Yeah. But as like a kid playing on the playground.
Oh yeah.
If that nickel part touched my stomach, I would have a rash for weeks.
I'd imagine like some like, you know, jewelry would even bother you.
Oh, that was the next thing I was going to say. Jewelry. I couldn't wear. Matter of fact, I didn't get my ears pierced until I was 22 because I had so many bad reactions to jewelry, necklaces, things like that. My hair, it was just, you know, I had this thick, curly, dense hair that nobody knew what to do with. And I always wanted it straight. And because that was the only style that I felt was acceptable. And there was nothing really to style my type of curly hair at that time. So I was always in the hair shop for literally Saturdays were just spend maybe 6 hours in the hair shop trying to get your hair straightened. So it was like,
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the north suburbs of Chicago in Evanston.
Okay.
And shout out to my E-Town fam. and you know, but that was Saturdays, you know, with a hot comb smelling burnt hair, but you felt like you had to do it because otherwise you weren't going to walk around looking at the time what they were like, oh, you look crazy or unkempt or unacceptable. And so I had a lot of, I would say issues around like, you know, just the fact that I couldn't wear my hair straight. I used to remember literally praying to God that when the stylist would wash my hair, that it would just come up straight so that I didn't have to go through the fighting and the pulling and the burning. I had so many burn marks on my ear. It was just a mess. I felt like I was just a walking advertisement for what not to do.
Yeah.
And what not to wear and how not to look. And so when I realized that cosmetic science was a thing, I was on the pharma track. So like drug development, I was, you know, kind of on the biochemistry track for actually developing pharma drugs. And then I stumbled across cosmetic science and I was like, wait a second, are you telling me I can use my skill set to create the solutions that I didn't see or didn't have as a child?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, sign me up. and it was just, it was very natural because what I also realized kind of, you know, kind of looking further out, I was very much, you know, had one foot in this very technical scientific world, but also another foot, very creative. I was a dancer. I was a singer. I was an artist. Like I actually went to school in California to be an actress. And I was just hoping I could get close to Hollywood so I could blow up. And then I realized that Stanford was in Northern California. But honestly, I thought I was going to be in, you know, like I thought I was going to do something more artsy, more creative. Cosmetic science is the perfect blend of both worlds because, of course, it's, you know, I feel like it's like 50% scientific, technical. There's a lot of things that you have to be done and boxes that have to be checked. But the other side of it is very qualitative and creative because everybody doesn't like the same thing. And so you have to really understand your consumer. You have to understand her needs, her pain points, her lifestyle to really create the perfect solution. So there's really no one answer fits all, one product fits all. Mm-hmm. And that's where kind of the creativity and the artsy part of formulating comes in. So it's really allowing me to use both sides of my brain, which I love
that. So it's like you're dealing with aesthetics. It's not like it's a drug. Like, does it work? Does it, you know,
that was
cure
one,
that, cure
the
that
reasons I left.
Itch.
Yeah. Because when I saw all the red tape around, you know, like what it would take to bring a drug to market and how some drugs, you could be working on it for 10 years and they just scrap it. Like, yeah, that didn't pass. And on to the next one. I was like, oh no, not my work. Like, somebody going to take this drug.
I
was like, this
oh
was,
my God, you're
cosmetic
so funny.
Chemistry was a much more fluid.
She wants the big reveal. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I was like, somebody's going to see what I've been working on for the last
five
years.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious. That's a really clear, the way you're describing that, that's super clear. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And I imagine, I'm picturing you on this pharma track. I'm imagining it was a bit of a boys club. And then you're at Stanford.
Yeah.
Probably not a very diverse one at that, if I am picturing the room correctly.
I was one of three women in my class, I believe, out of a class of 20. So there.
Oh wow!
I'm sorry, there were 19 students, if I remember correctly, who graduated Kimmy my year. Three of us were women, and I was the only black student, and then my best friend was the only Latina student, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, well, you just told us about how being a black woman, well, a black girl, how that informs your beauty decisions. Mm-hmm. But now that you're in the biz and you're in this boys club, mm-hmm. still probably not that diverse. How does being a black woman like inform the way you look at developing products or does it?
Oh no, definitely. I say that's my superpower. That's what, that is what has allowed me to be as successful as I have up to this point is because I see a perspective. And I see in the solution and how the consumer interacts with what we're formulating in a very different way. My first lab was three men. We were developing, that was at ORS. We were developing mainly multicultural hair products specifically for African-American women. And it was an Indian guy, a black guy, I think a Polish guy, and they're all bald. And we're sitting around a table talking about what this woman wants. And I was like, look, I know I might be like 23, but I'm a little more experienced in this than all three of y'all combined. And, you know, it took some time to develop that confidence. But what I realized was that there was value to being able to speak both languages. So the mm-hmm. marketing team loved working with me And they would like secretly take me under their wings and let me come to the photo shoots and do all the fun marketing stuff because I understood the consumer in a way that, you know, my counterparts didn't. And being able to speak the marketing language, the consumer language, understanding what she wanted her edges to lay. Well, that's kind of hard to explain to somebody who has no edges or has...
To the bald guys, yeah.
Right. But then being able to come back to the lab and say, we need to develop a formula that has a fixative that allows some type of pressure points on the temples in order to, you know, allow for longevity and hold, you know, all the technical jargon. Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay.
Now you're speaking our language. Right. Yeah. And so that's a superpower.
Right. And then being able to take that when we develop a formula and then, you know, they would come into the presentation days, as we called them, and would use all these big words and everybody would be like, huh? You know, and like, it was like, okay.
Your edges are going to lay flat.
Right. It's like, so, you know, we used this type of fixative that is going to allow for the edges to lay, but it'll rinse out easy. It's not going to, you know, create flaking. And being able to relate those things to the consumer, because that's what she cares about. She doesn't care about the big words and, you know, the technical jargon and the patents. She just wants to know if it works.
I can picture you, so as you get, like, you just came out of Stanford, you know cosmetics or hair from being a woman and doing your own hair. What surprised you the most when you got into this lab? Did you have a vision of the way product creation works? And was there anything surprising about seeing how it actually works?
Yes. And in many cases, I was surprised coming from a very rigid, you know, kind of quantitative environment. How in the lab, it was kind of like, yes, there's a formula, but we're going to try a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It was more like cooking than like technical, like formulation in pharma, right? And I enjoyed that. And it's kind of like you got to create and play until you got something really close. And that's when you lock in on like the details of the formula and understanding how it works and talking about the stability and then looking at safety and things like that. But there was such a creative window to that process, which is what that's why I immediately fell in love with it, because it kind of allowed me to get out of the box that I felt like I had been put in. Very much so most of my young life, it was kind of like, you can't be both. You can't be the dancer and the chemist, you got to choose one. But this allowed me to feel like I was in this world of beauty and fashion where there was a little more creativity involved. And I love that aspect of it. But then also honing in on all the technical details that were needed to ensure the consumer safety, ensure stability. Like, it was just the best of both worlds. And it just made sense to me.
I asked too, because I was thinking about how presented to us sometimes as consumers, products are like, this is the end all, one answer, we found it. But what I hear you saying is like, there could be three different answers and we'll just tell you the story in a couple different ways. It's not like, this is the product.
You're pretty much right, yes. Of course, marketing will always say, we want to market it this way. But as a chemist, I'm always thinking of all the other ways we could do work through this problem.
Oh, yeah.
That's not probably the best route from a business perspective. You know, but, you know, everybody think of all of the variables that we have from, you know, the type of hair we have, the curl pattern, the porosity, elasticity, the environment we're in, down to our skin, to, you know, normal, dry, oily. Like, there are just so many different variables. And really, there is no one product fits all. There are products that address more things than others. And then there are products that are very specific for very intentional problem or products that are intentional to solve specific problems. And we need both of those because nobody is the same. So, you know, I think there are as many solutions as there are, you know, the multitude and variety of people that exist. And, you know, and that's the whole point, is to make sure that there are solutions for everybody, because that was the kind of the notion, you know, 20, 30 years ago, is kind of one product fits all. But now we live in a world where we we've learned to, you know, that the world is very colorful and there are a lot of different types of people and different types of needs. And that also, that's what has helped the marketplace expand. And I love embracing that reality rather than I got to make one product that's going to make everybody happy. Because then that means, I have job security.
But are there, you know, yes, there are different products for different people and different hair types and everything. But, you know, I'm sure you get questions just generally across the board from all different types of people, whether friends or relatives or, you know, consumers. What's a no-no? What should we not use? We're not going to use this ingredient, right? Like, are there any ingredients unequivocally, no matter what your hair type, where you're from, you will not use?
That's an interesting question. One, I think a lot of it is due to people's kind of sensitivity and priorities of how their lifestyle, like how green are you? Do you know how sensitive is your skin, is your hair?
No, we're talking about you.
Me?
Yeah. And the reason why I ask this is because we are like in a moment, I do think we're moving back from this a bit. And Jen and I have mm-hmm. talked about this on, you know, previous shows and in you know, shorter and deeper discussions. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've come from the past year or two of just like marketing of like, know this, we're free of that, free. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know where you stand as, you know, somebody with actual expertise on this subject. What are you like?
Yeah, not what people want. What would you know?
You're, I'm not talking to the marketing department right now. Gotcha. I'm talking to somebody that actually
knows.
There you go.
Yeah. It's a much different conversation. Yeah. So I think there are a lot of myths. My biggest pet peeve are people who like hate silicones. Silicones are like the best thing since sliced bread, in my opinion. they do a lot of great things, but they've gotten this bad reputation that they're, you know, evil and they stop your hair from growing. I'm like, no, it's the best thing you can use, especially if you, use a lot of heat in your hair, but it's great for shine. It's great for just in ensuring that, you know, the moisture stays captured in the strands of the hair. It's one of like the miracle ingredients that I wish I could just use in everything.
Okay. We love silicone. She wants to use it in everything. She wants it on a sandwich. Okay. She wants it on her fries. Okay.
Let's see. Petrolatum, which is basically like Vaseline. A lot of people are very anti-petrolatum. But actually, it's one of the best ingredients as far as, you know, holding in moisture and being able to, you know, kind of absorb and not leave a residue. It's one of the best ingredients. Now, when you look at the studies, why people are anti-petrolatum, it always has to do with how it interacts with the skin for the most part, or how it is actually processed. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are anti using it in their hair, which I'm like, does it matter? Your hair is dead. So why wouldn't you use it on the one part of your body that it really can affect, especially since it washes out fairly easy? If anything, I think people have it backwards a lot of times where they're like, oh, I don't want to use it in my hair. Ew, petrolatum. But then it's the second ingredient in their favorite lotion. And I'm like, ma'am, you have it backwards.
Yeah. Is there anything else like that you feel people are like, this is, they say no, but I say it's fine?
I would say, so parabens.
Or do you have any no's? Yeah. And do you have any no's?
You should use parabens sparingly. I do, you know, see the data. It's not conclusive, but if you are, you know, a very health conscious person, I could see why people want to avoid parabens. But there, you know, but I also feel like there is.
Are we talking about endocrine disruption? Like, what is the data that you're thinking
and
of?
And how do I know how many parabens are in
parabens have been found in and associated with a lot of different types of breast cancer. And they, you know, one of the biggest theories is that they've been used in deodorants. And a lot of times that's how it, you know, kind of comes into the breast tissue. But there's actually hasn't been any like conclusive study that shows that that's a definitive way to, you know, that is linked to cancer. It is a potential factor, there, you know, it has come
up. We've talked about correlation and causation on our podcast.
Yes. Correlation and causation. And so that is one of the gray areas, but people have, you know, put their flag in the sand and they're like, parabens, no. And it's like, there are things that have way more data around it, like the hamburger you're eating at McDonald's, mm-hmm. than the parabens.
Oh, okay. So that's on the no list.
I do indulge every now and again, but it's like, it is hard for me to understand how I see people, you know, going in about, I only use juices and berries in my hair, but then I see you eating a burger at McDonald's. It's like, you're more concerned about what you put on these dead follicles coming off your scalp than what you're putting in your body. Like that makes no sense to me. It's like, if you're going to live that lifestyle, be about that life. If you're going to be about that life, like, keep that same energy, right?
People are not logical.
But people are just, it's just trendy. And it's something that, you know, it got a lot of hype. And so people just bought into it without really understanding the why. When you ask a lot of people, why don't you like petrolatum? Why don't you like silicones? They really don't know. They just say, oh, I just had heard.
Or they say, and I'm like, they who's say? They?
And I'm like, who is they? Please tell me. Send they to me so we can talk.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
It was funny when you said those two ingredients. I was like, because people have this connotation, or not connotation, they just like see them as like heavy, slimy. I don't know. They're picturing coating on their hair. Is built up really a bad thing? We hear a lot about that in hair marketing. Is there science behind that? But build up, like, can you really get a big old coating on your hair? Tell us.
Let me tell you the secret to build up. Wash your damn hair. That is the
secret.
Does
shampoo really just take out whatever?
That is literally the whole point of shampoo. But then we had co-washing. It's like, oh, you don't co-wash your hair because you don't want to strip the oils. I'm like, but then you don't like buildup, but you don't want to use a shampoo. Like, you're not making any sense, ma'am. And you know, again, a lot of this depends on the type of hair, your activity, what products you're using. This comes right back to my point about silicones. what people consider buildup is actually protecting your hair. And if you feel like, oh, silicones are too heavy for my hair, then use some of the lighter silicones. There are so the silicones are so light, evaporate, you know, like they have different consistencies and weights to silicones. So don't put them all in one box. And definitely if you have fine hair, you have buildup, the buildup happens faster because your hair absorbs pretty much like 30% of its weight in water. And so you can definitely oversaturate your hair to the point where it becomes limp. So that means if you have fine hair, you probably have to wash your hair more frequently in order to avoid heavy buildup. But if you have thicker strands, if you have more resistant hair, more porous hair, you may not experience that same ingredient, that same product in the way that somebody with fine, low porosity hair may experience it. And so that's why I say it's very important to understand your hair and, you know, your biology before you just throw everything in one box. Because silicones are great for this consumer, maybe you should be used sparingly for another type of consumer. But when it comes down to it, when we all wash our hair, the silicones all come out. There's also buildup from, you know, kind of products like flaking, you know, kind of the white residue that you might see in your hair, you know, and just oil buildup over time because your hair can't absorb all that oil. It absorbs very little oil. Actually, oil is used to pretty much create an invisible barrier on the hair so that the water that you have trapped inside the cuticle stays inside the cuticle. You know, I like to do an experiment or like a little demonstration of oil and water. Like that's the whole point. You put the oil on top of your hair to keep the water that you have worked very hard to infuse into your hair in there. But oil is not a moisturizer. You know, it is
an occlusive.
Exactly. So, right. So these are myths that I like to kind of address in some of my workshops and online and really just getting people to understand the science of it all so they can understand how silly some of these things sound.
So I like what you're talking about with like, you know, the oil, the silicones can be like, you know, a protectant, but I've got to be honest. Like sometimes whenever I do use hot tools, not often, but when I do, I just like go real fast. I don't always use a heat protectant. She almost jumped off the Zoom. We almost lost her.
I encourage you watch my video on my website called Fry Eggs, Not Hair. And I do an experiment of what it looks like when you don't, when your hair is, you know, on using heat tools without a protectant versus with it. And it's the same thing of the whole commercial when they say, here's your brain on drugs.
I was just picturing that. Like, any questions?
That's exactly. It's the same experiment, kind of.
Oh, boy.
But essentially what silicones do, they slow the speed of how fast heat actually penetrates the hair. And what causes all those cracks and abrasion, which leads to premature breakage, is because heat is being, you know, forced into the hair at a very fast rate. Well, silicones help to slow down how fast the heat gets through, but the hair still gets straight. It's still getting the heat, but it reduces how many like cracks and abrasions happen during the process. So for you, especially if you have like oily hair or fine strands, you might want to use a light silicone spray versus like some of the serums that can be really heavy because you may have an association with silicones being that they're heavy, they're greasy. Light silicone sprays, these are the ones that have, that are probably their first ingredient, probably like cyclomethicone, cyclopentasiloxane. Those are very light, light silicones that evaporate very easily. So that's better than nothing. But a lot of people associate silicones with the serums. And if you have like oily hair, or fine strands, people are like, oh, it kind of makes your hair feel like a cowlick or something.
Is that dimethicone? Is that one of the heavier ones?
Yeah, dimethicone tends to be one of the heavier ones. But then there are also water-soluble silicones, like your aminodimethicones, PEG-12-dimethicone. They tend to be more less substantive to the hair, but still offer some benefits in shine and protection and moisture retention. So it's like, I think people have associated silicones to like that thick dimethicone, but there are so many types of silicones.
Like it's going to make my hair like come together in like little sections.
But the sprays are probably really great for fine and oily hair because they evaporate very quickly.
Okay. Don't fry your hair. Can I get another? I feel like we're doing a lot of myth busting here, so I'm gonna lay another one on you. Can your hair become immune to a particular shampoo or conditioner? I hear this from a lot of people. I swear it's true for me sometimes. Like you have a favorite shampoo, and then like 3 weeks later, it's just not doing it for you.
Right. So I think
what's going on there?
It is possible, and a lot of times it's just because in many cases there's like. I'm not the most scientific explanation, but one of my theories about this is that a lot of times we are addressing the cuticle layer of our hair. We're washing, we're treating, we're styling the cuticle layer. Oftentimes, a lot of styling or using the same type of product over and over, especially with aggressive washing or brushing or anything like that can change the surface of the hair. And so how the cuticles like sit in almost like shingles, like on a roof. Mm-hmm. And when we're kind of brushing away at those shingles, it's like you're almost like lifting up another layer. And so oftentimes products will interact with that new kind of exposed layer differently.
So my hair is changing.
Yes.
So I'm thinking the products stopped working, but really my hair has just
it's interacting
a bit.
With it differently. Because also that means that you probably have a lot of kind of rough spots, holes, abrasions on the surface of your hair, which means you probably need something different now than what you had in the beginning. And a lot of times that just comes from normal wear and tear. We can't really avoid that. You can cause premature breakage or damage to the cuticle layer just by doing this. You know, people who do this all the time or play in their hair. Every time you touch your hair, every time you have any type of friction, any type of, rubbing of the surface of the hair, it's literally like, dead skin. You can't see it, but it's literally flaking off. And you can do a lot of that. It's the same with skin too.
Do you buy into silk pillowcases?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, she likes it.
Yeah, I don't go anywhere without it. I take my silk pillowcase to the hotel.
I don't find them as comfortable to sleep on, but people really like them. Like
they're not, but I look good in the morning. yes, and anybody I date needs to know. I'm like, you must understand why I need my silk pillowcase.
And you do it to prevent breakage, I imagine.
It is. It's basically just... Again, talking about that friction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like,
that's why I asked.
You are reducing friction. You are reducing also like cotton material absorbs water. So anytime you put your hair on cotton or polyester, any, types of material that absorb
Jess,
water.
Should we admit that we go to bed with our hair wet?
Jen and I are like hair
on
twins.
On cotton pillowcases. Yeah.
I'm doing a cotton poly blend right now. Like Macy's had a sale and like, I really like, it's pretty rough.
But these are the things, but also see, these are the things that I think get lost in translation, especially culturally, because a lot of Black women would never go to, sleep like that, right? But it's because of the texture of our hair is what we're trying to, how we have to manipulate our hair to get the style right. But I never understood when a lot of my white girlfriends were like washing their hair every day, I was like, what? Who does that? That was like, so when I realized that, it was like mind blown. This was like when I was like 10 or 11, I had a sleepover And my friend was like, you don't wash your hair every day? And I was like, no.
Yeah. You do?
You do. Exactly.
No, I'm laughing, thinking of my soggy, gross pillowcase. And like, what a fool. Like, it's like, yeah. It's so weird that I have breakage. Meanwhile, I'm like thrashing about like every night with my wet hair and my like rough burlap pillowcase.
Right. Yeah. But these are things, especially like, I just had a conversation today where I was like, these are things like as a child, like this was something you knew. You had a silk scarf, you had a silk pillowcase or something. Now that these conversations are being had like more mainstream and social media, I'm like, oh no, everybody's learning all of our secrets. But scientifically, it makes a lot of sense. And that's when I come in, I'm like, well, let's talk about the science behind this. It's not so crazy. But yes, I mean, also you have to admit, if your hair is like really, really wet, then yes, your pillowcases are absorbing all that water. If I already have a style intact or I'm trying to keep my curls intact, what I'm trying not to do is create friction or static that's going to cause the curls to go every which way, which is why the silk pillowcase is much better for maintaining a style that is already in place.
Jen, yeah, that we makes gotta sense. Find a new way. We gotta find a new way.
I know, because like I do like an air dry wave. If I don't want it to get all roughed up, clearly I could wrap it or do a silk pillowcase and I'd be better off. Can I ask you, before we talk about your personal favorite products, I had one more question. I feel like a lot of times Jess and I sit in these like beauty launch events and the hair company is like, we have this ingredient and it's whatever, muru muru, kapasu, acai,
Himalayan
oatmeal,
water.
Beef.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, is there a list of like, these ingredients actually do something and these are just like, well, throw it in, it sounds pretty.
Yeah.
Like, do those special ingredients that we like a trendy, are they really doing anything?
You're trying
this
to get
This is where
me
we
fired.
Need video.
And if the answer is it makes you feel good about using the product, it smells good, that works for me, you know?
So let me kind of explain it this way.
Okay.
If you see a product that is extremely affordable, very low, low price, and they're talking about, oh, it has all of these exotic ingredients, just assume it's not in there at a very high amount. It's probably in there just enough to make the ingredient panel. However, I would hope at higher price points that a brand, a chemist would invest more in using those ingredients at a higher concentration because the margins are there. You can afford it.
But are they beneficial too if you do put them in a higher concentration?
In some cases, yes.
In some
Unfortunately,
cases. Okay.
There are not a lot of studies for a lot of these exotic ingredients. They're really more theories. And also, you know, one of the favorite parts of my job when the world was open was being able to go and experience how these natural ingredients were used, you know, culturally in different parts of the world. And so you're really taking the lessons learned from people who have passed it down generation to generation and how they have used it and figuring out how can I incorporate this into a more formal formula to leverage those benefits for the overall, you know, benefit of this formulation. And so, yes, in certain concentrations, any ingredient can have an impact, but
especially it sounds like if there's a cultural history behind it, there's a reason fermented rice water has been used for 1,000 years. Like it's gotta be doing something.
But,
yeah,
but also let's mean they were actually putting their hair in fermented rice water. That was the only ingredient versus, oh, I'm just going to put a little drop here or I'm going to, you know, yay, let's call it rice water. No, a lot of times the benefits, and if, I'll give you a secret. Don't tell nobody I told y'all. If you look at some of the claim substantiation briefs, especially like in Europe, if they're ever available to the public or you have access to how, you know, people are making claims, a lot of times they say, oh, it's more moisturizing or it's, you know, helping to soothe the scalp. It may not be the actual key ingredients that they promote, but it's other ingredients in the base formula that's doing the heavy lifting. And then they kind of just throw the key.
And Erica's like, uh-huh, it was the silicone.
Yeah. So, but
no, that's good
but
to know.
There are also, but what I love is when I do have a product brief, a project where, you know, if somebody tells me the price point of the product is $40, I can go ham. You know, it's like I could go literally just be pouring all this stuff in and really understanding how some of the exotic oils and extracts really make a difference. And I can visibly see it when we're testing because we're literally putting them in at concentrations that are making a difference. And I look at it as, if I take this ingredient out, will a consumer notice the difference? That's when I think of an ingredient as effective or used at an efficacious concentration. But, you know, there are some ingredients, let's just say if you take them out, you wouldn't notice.
Right. It's just kind of for the romance of
this product. It's for the romance. And we all love to be romanced.
Yeah. I really like to be romanced. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm not really about like that clinical product. Like, I just want the ingredient. Just give it to me in the pack. And like, I want to know the percentage and just give me the results. Like, I fall for the whole, I don't say fall for, because that makes it sound like, you know, I'm foolish and people who buy into beauty are foolish. Like, I love the whole storytelling. I love, you know, the origin story. I love it all. So, yeah, well, I don't mind.
That's the fun part. That's what makes beauty fun and it's different recreation. And it's never the same, right? And so, and I do love the aspect of what I do, being able to tap into all these different cultures, all these different regions of the world that offer so many natural benefits from the earth. And then, you know, figuring out how can we utilize this in our everyday life? You know, because it seems like this group of people have it together and it has to be the Himalayan water that they're drinking. Be something in the soil, something in the oils that makes it seem like they just have it all together. Skin is clear, you know, they look, you know, they're 60, looking like not a day over 25. Like, what is it in this cultural regimen that I can pull from and utilize in my own life? And that's what I love. It's like you're literally going around the world to figure out how to have a little bit of this and a little bit of that and experience all these different cultures and, you know, and the different things that you touch every day, which a lot of times, you know, for a lot of people who don't have that experience, you're kind of getting that experience at the shelf in your bathroom. Yeah. And that's, I'm okay with that.
Romance. Yeah. Most people do not get to go to Tahiti. So yeah, Tahitian bloom flower.
Right.
Or jujubes.
Manoy. Thank you. That's what I was trying to get at. Now, are you allowed to share with us? I know we can't know all your clients, but some of your favorite hair products or beauty products in general?
Yeah.
You seem like you have it figured out a little bit.
You know, that, you know, I just look that way.
So what are some of your favorites?
It's different day to day. So let me think. Right now, I'm obsessed with a brand called Ajwa that recently launched in Sephora. Ajwa is the founder is from Ghana, and I think it means born on a Monday. And so she's put a lot of her cultural aspects and kind of cultural inferences into her formulation, and it just shows. And the products are really great. So I'm in love with her. I think it's the leave-in conditioner. Like, that's my go-to now. Pattern Beauty, like, obsessed with the gel right now. Let's see. I currently am using Elodia shampoo. This is a doctor who went from being a PhD, she's a scientist as well, and kind of decided, I'm just going to stop what I'm doing and put all of my creative and energy into developing a product to maintain healthy hair. Shampoo is fire.
Elodia is the name?
Yep, Elodia. And then kind of like my staples, like I love a good Cantu product, and you know, that's one of my kind of go-tos. Like, I feel like I can use a lot of things in their collections to you know, get my curls to act right. And then also Shea Moisture. Like it's, I'm always like, if I don't have smoothie in my bathroom, the hair, like it's not going to be a good day.
It's a classic.
It's a classic. And then they're just very creative in all the collections that they use and how they utilize a lot of the ingredients stories. I just love how they innovate.
What's on your eyes right now, can I ask? Because when you popped on, and you often wear glasses, but I was like, that is a good eye to go with those glasses.
Thank you. Maybelline. Yeah. Maybelline. And then I use a lot of lip bar. Lip bar for the lipstick and just like a natural nude that I can throw on real quick. And then...
Wait, is your Maybelline, like, is that your mascara? Is that what you're talking
yes,
about?
Yes, the Maybelline
like
eyeliner.
Like Great Lash?
I believe.
The pink and green?
Yes.
Oh, the classic.
Classic. And the eyeliner. It's the matte one. And and then I use lip bar foundation and lipstick.
Okay. Lovely. Good brand.
Thank you.
I like your hair
yeah.
recipe.
I mean, my bathroom is pretty much a drugstore. And it's just funny because I have all these different jars and bottles and that have like just numbers on them.
So,
so
testing
a lot of
everything
times
out.
I'm using stuff that never made it to market, but I was like, it was my favorite and I still have three jars of it. So we're going to keep using it.
Job benefit, huh?
Exactly.
Wait, before we let you go though, I don't know if you're up for this. I gave you a warning, but we do this thing at the end of every interview where we do a little speed round of fun questions. She's game. Of course she's game. I can tell.
Wait,
Jess, you want to hit her with the fat
five.
Mascara five? Yeah.
Yeah. So just quick word association. Don't overthink it. What is the beauty product that you first fell in love with?
That's a great question. Let me think about that. I would have to say it would be eyeliner. I cannot leave the house. Like, even if I'm going to the garbage can, I probably have on eyeliner.
Really?
That and a good brow.
But when you were like younger, did you like have one that you loved?
Oh, when I was younger.
First.
Yeah, the like first your first, love. Like,
was oh, it like a Wet n Wilds? That was like
I'm into
early.
This. Like, sign me up for this beauty game.
Honestly, it was probably this product called Carrot Oil. And it was basically like a cream that I put in my hair. Mm-hmm. That's the first one I remember, like feeling like it was always at the house and feeling like I couldn't leave without it. But it was just a moisturizing cream. That was it. But it also smelled really good. And it was like, I thought it was like a whole bunch of carrot oil. and the hair mayonnaise, those were two products that like conditioning wise, I felt like my hair was always better when I had those products. It was all about just main. At the time, I didn't realize it, but it was just like my hair stayed moisturized longer, which was one of my big issues. I just had severely porous hair that was always drying out really fast. So I drank that stuff, literally. Like my hair was like.
Okay, well, this one's a little bit deeper. What quality do you most admire in others?
In others,
mm-hmm.
confidence and authenticity. Like, I don't care who you are, you know, what you like, but if you own it and you're about it, like about that life, then
yeah.
I respect it. And there are people who I'm like, I'm not with it, but I respect the fact that they have owned it. And that's just, you know, they have accepted it and they have made this statement to the world that that's where they stand. Yeah. And I can respect that. And that allows me to know who you are and there's no wavering. It's the back and forth and the, you know, kind of shadiness that I don't like.
Don't like shady. At first I thought you said competence and I was like, I like that. We haven't gotten that one yet. I was like, but I too don't like when people don't know what the F they're doing. I was like, and also, I do not want to be messing up on her team. No, no, no. Competence.
That, I'm going to make that my second one.
Yeah, okay. Confidence.
Confidence.
I was like, oh, review time. Yeah. Okay. Confidence. Just to be clear. Okay. If there was one rule that you wish everyone would follow, what would it be?
Man, these are hard.
They can be like silly though. You don't have to like, you can take them as like silly or as serious as you want. Like you could really be like, whatever.
One rule, like don't get in the turn lane if you ain't turning. Like that is my pet peeve. If we're coming up to a red light and you know you're going straight and I'm behind you with a clicker on saying I'm turning, get out my way. Like that.
Competence, people.
I every day on my way to the office, I go down a side street just so I don't run into those people. Funny. Because when I get behind those people, my whole attitude changes. I'm no longer a child of God. It is not nice.
Don't do that to her. Okay.
No longer a child of God. Oh my God. Oh my God. That was so funny. Okay. If there were to be a movie made of your life, who would narrate it?
I feel like it. I mean, I just got to go with Morgan Freeman. Like, that's.
Just lay it. I'm going to go right to the top.
Right to the top. Right. Like, it has to be ominous and, you know, have like emotion. It was like, and then she arose. Like, it has to be dramatic like that. Yes.
I like it. A lot of gravitas in this movie. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm still picturing you behind the wheel, like with a scowl and like your foot on the gas and like ready to blaze.
I have a lead foot. It is not good.
Oh my God. Okay. And then what is the most played song on your playlist right now?
Ooh.
What?
For me, it's like either straight trap music or like gospel. Like there's no in between for me.
Child of God or someone's in my turning lane.
Like right now, it's probably Up by Cardi B.
Yes. Okay.
Or WAP. I don't know. It goes back and forth. But then on the other hand, I'm playing like Cycles by... what's his name? Jonathan McReynolds, which is like a very popular Grammy Award winning gospel artist. It's one of those two playlists.
Erica, you contain multitudes.
You've got range, you know? That's so funny.
Just depends on what time of the day you catch me.
Well, I think we caught you at a good time because... This was super fun, learned so much.
Thank you. You're making me laugh.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on Fat Mascara.
Thanks for hanging out with me.
This was great.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com. We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Razor One product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.